Hey, this is Renzo from the LAO. Here to do a sound check.
Thank you, Renzo. Testing.
Yep, sounds good.
Testing.
Sounds good.
Testing.
Sounds good.
Testing.
That sounds good. There were two containers.
Testing.
Those are fresh made. Thank you.
That sounds good.
Sorry. They didn't actually
testing.
Sounds good.
Testing.
That sounds good.
Testing.
Sounds good.
Testing.
Sounds good.
Testing.
That sounds good.
And testing.
Yep, sounds good.
Thanks, dude. I mean,
yep.
Renzo.
A good meeting. Bye.
Good morning. I will call to order this meeting of the Senate Finance Subcommittee of the on the University of Alaska's budget. We are a subcommittee of the whole. It is Thursday, March 12th at 9:01 a.m. I'm joined this morning by Co-Chair Hoffman, Co-Chair Stedman, Co-Chair Olson, Senators Merrick, Kronk, and Kaufman. I'm Senator Keel chairing. We are joined this morning by the University of Alaska President, President Pat Pitney, at least for a little longer. This morning, I should note before we begin, it is March 12th. It's Ashley Johnson Barr Day, and I know we don't have a floor session today, but I wanted to mark that for the record and for the benefit of folks here in the building. Madam President, we're a little less formal in subcommittee than in the full finance committee always, so I will give you a lot of leeway to drive this presentation this morning. If you would please run us through the University of Alaska's fiscal year 27 budget proposal.
Well, thank you very much, and I'd like to start out with a thank you. This will be my last Senate Finance Subcommittee hearing, as I understand it, and I just appreciate the opportunity to work with this group for the years and years that I have been able to in different capacities and what I've learned, and just appreciate the support all of you have shown the university and all of the leadership you've shown this state in your roles. And so bittersweet to walk away, but last Friday my sixth grandchild was born, and it's time to spend more time with them. So a big thank you. With that, I'll move right into the presentation. And is there, here we go, forward. There seems to be a lack of clicker. Do I need this one?
We'll take a very brief at ease for technical orientation. Okay, we are back on the record.
Back on the record.
President Pitney.
I'm going to start. We had some overview slides, but you can check those out because we're going to address all of them as we go into the content. I'm going to start out with key challenges. Of course, this group knows about the Higher Education Investment Fund, and probably the most critical component, and this affects the university budget, but isn't the university budget. But replenishing the Higher Education Investment Fund is probably the most important piece of stability for the institution, but also one of the most important pieces of workforce complement for the state of Alaska. The changes that the legislature made in the last couple of years on the Alaska Performance Scholarship and AAG program has really made a tremendous difference in how people are looking at the university and how students are choosing to stay in state. And the impact of Alaska students staying in state is 75% of our graduates stay here long term. 80% and sometimes up to 90%, depending on the program, are working within a year of graduation. For students who go outside to school, only 25% come back in the long run. And so this replenishing the hive is so critically important. The other piece of kind of uncertainty that we have weathered well, I want to note, is the federal, I call it federal turmoil. Over the last year, we've had over 70 grants frozen. And of those, we were able to unfreeze some of the larger grants, 25. And that, so we were able to hold on to $78 million in grant funding from the feds. We did, however, lose funding for Alaska Native and Native Hawaiian Serving Institutions programs at $8.8 million. That will affect future years, and it actually affects some of our smallest campuses. Dillingham, Bethel, and Sitka are the ones that are most impacted. And we have had 34 grants that were terminated, and the remaining balance in those grants was $17 million. But having said that, in 2020, fiscal year 2025, our federal funding and federal and overall research was the highest in the institution's history at over $250 million. We are positioned with such alignment in some key strategic areas, and critical minerals is one, energy is another, drones and defense and Arctic policy. All of those have tremendous alignment with both national priorities and the state priorities. And so as much as we have the turbulence, we've actually fared reasonably well, and look forward to capitalizing on this alignment that we're facing right now.
President Pitney, you said 70 grants initially frozen, so you've got the values of the ones that are thawed and terminated. 10 or 11 left, do you have a rough estimate of how much is still in question?
We're at about $7.5 million still in question. So, a huge thank you to our federal delegation for their help in addressing the frozen grants and moving them forward. Other challenges we're facing, of course, facility maintenance, and I believe you're having a hearing on major maintenance tomorrow. So I'll leave that to the experts. This has been our highest priority since I started as the university budget director, and actually was the highest priority before I started, and I started as the university budget director in 1998. So it remains a high priority, and to the degree that we can find a successful way to get deferred maintenance funding over the finish line and passed intact would be wonderful, and it remains our top capital priority. Other challenges are similar to what state agencies are facing, are in the cybersecurity area and in the technology refreshment and replenishment. I do want to thank this body for the SIS, or the Students Information System Modernization Funds, that was appropriated in 2023. We are making great strides in moving our student information systems into a much more modern and friendly perspective. We have more to go, but that investment was huge. And at the same time, we've been able to continue to improving our cybersecurity posture, but it always remains a risk and always needs investment. And, of course, human resources is we have a competitive labor market. We have increasing health care costs. So we're always managing that. At the same time, just like every other agency and every other business in Alaska, the housing shortages make a difference. Moving on to specifically our operating budget requests. So our state funding request is $29 million, or we'll call these Tier 1 requests. First and foremost is our compensation. And at $15.2 million, this is about 70% of the total compensation and health benefits needed. The remaining funds are through our receipt authority. But full compensation is a critical condition to ongoing stability. And if there's one thing I want to do, leaving this position and leaving this great institution, is leave it with stability. And so full compensation and replenishment of the hive are the critical components to that stable foundation. Operating costs, as I mentioned, are cybersecurity, facilities maintenance, utilities, risk management. All of these costs continue to go up year over year. We have been able to mitigate some cost increases. Over last 2 years ago, we were able to reorganize our risk management and our insurance policies to a cooperative carrier across multiple universities, and we were able to stop increases for 2 years, and that has been huge. But you know, a 2 or 3% increase is, you know, $500,000 to $700,000. So we are always looking for the savings, but even small increases are real dollars. Student mental health has surfaced across institutions in the United States, and you know, kind of a outcropping of COVID, also a change in kind of acceptability for people to get help, but our demand for student mental health is increasing consistently, and to meet the needs of our students, that's one of our higher priority cost requests. I'll spend more time on our student recruitment, retention, and graduation efforts further in the PowerPoint, but this is our board's number one priority, and also for the university, the best approach to long-term stability across the board. We have seen enrollment increases the last 3 years. This is very different from what other states are seeing. And I give credit to our board for their attention on increasing student recruitment and retention and speed to graduation. On our research and receipt authority requests, we have multiple one-time or short-term asks to advance our research, advancing the UAF bid to a Research One organization, ag and food security, drones, and critical minerals. I'm going to spend a little bit of time on the critical minerals request and tie it back to an investment that this body and the rest of the legislature did a few years ago. So in 2022, the state was fortunate to have some replenishment of general funds from COVID dollars that happened. This body took that opportunity to invest in the university, and they invested in energy, mariculture, critical minerals, and heavy oil research. Right now, we are in a position, because of that investment, of having all three of our universities and industry and Native corporations engaged in a proposal to the National Science Foundation. That proposal, if we win it, and we're one of 15 finalists, 4 will be awarded. If we win that proposal, we will have an NSF critical minerals engine, and that award is $160 million over 10 years. It comes with an expectation of a $3 million match, $3 million per year for the life of that award. And that is a direct result of a $7 million investment made 4 years ago now. But because of that state investment 4 years ago, we are in a position to be so much more competitive and take advantage of this state federal university capacity alignment. So I want to note that, and I think many of you have heard from Leanne Monk and Steve Masterman over the last week or two about the details of that award. So very excited about that. And last, we have receipt authority request just to make sure our budget and our actual revenue and spend match. Finally, our capital budget, deferred maintenance, first and foremost priority. Other capital requests are the other half of small projects, Alaska Leaders Archives, the Mariculture facility that were half-funded last year. So we put in a 2.5 request for the Alaska Leaders Archive. 1.25 was funded, and so we put in the remaining 1.25 of that. Same with the Mariculture. So there's several small projects in the capital that are out there. Wrong direction. Sorry. So this is the details of our what we call our Tier 1 requests. The $15 million in compensation, also with another 5.6 in receipt authority. Right now, the governor's budget has $6.5 million with 14.3 receipt authority. And what that does is force reallocation. The same with operating cost increases. These cost increases, the total cost is $11.7 million. We're asking for $8 million in general fund. These costs, if not funded, take reallocation to meet. That's fewer people. Last year, only part of our compensation requests were funded. And that forced, we are about 125 fewer people. We are always looking for efficiencies, but what we want to do is create efficiencies so we can make investments into things like our recruitment, retention, and graduation. When we're making up for fixed costs, we're losing employees and can't make the reinvestment into those things that are going to have a return to the state. So it's critically important to get the board's operating cost. I do want to give you a heads up that there is additional amendments that are expected tomorrow for two very small unions, our Local 6070 and our firefighters, that were recently closed out, but that's less than $1 million in total for those two. We talked about the student mental health, and again, I want to wait on the others. So this is the detail of what I already covered. Here's the detail on the research programs.
We have a question from Senator Stedman.
Yeah, back. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Back on 7.
Yep.
So it appears that the governor's submitted budget has a lot of deletions from your requests. And what was their, do you know what their methodology was, why they basically reversed your compensation from receipt authority to an appropriation? Pretty much inversed it.
Exactly. Priority and constraint. And it's not that we can cover it. It will force, if not funded, we force reallocation. I call the investments in these investments accelerators. Accelerators and investments in our future. When those were funded, we made progress and we were able now to be competitive in things like the critical minerals. We've been competitive in, you know, the investment this board made or this group made in mariculture. The result of that was a $45 million mariculture grant to the Southeast Conference. That's real economic development. I call these accelerators, but I call the compensation and the operating cost increases foundational. And the foundation is what's necessary for stability from which we can accelerate. And so not a reason, just a prioritization. And I do believe if the legislature funds full compensation that we would be able to work with the governor to make sure that it is maintained through the full cycle.
Just as a follow-up, yeah, that's the concern because of the governor has a tendency of just removing the additions, yeah. Even his own additions, for whatever reason. And we have to stay within our bookends and our revenue, which we don't know what it's going to be until it's announced here in a couple of days. So one of the cautions that we will be using in the budget process is trying to figure out, you know, what would survive the veto pen and actually get implemented. Mm-hmm. So,
again, I feel with the board, you know, that our board now, Board of Regents, is 100% the governor's choice. This is clearly the board's top priority, and I think we have a good relationship with the governor, and if funded through the legislature, I think we'd get it to stick.
Okay. You're optimistic, but that's good to be optimistic at the finance table.
I'm practical. I've done this a long time.
Madam President, is there a particular, when you look at the Regents' proposal, is there a particular source of the receipts that the Regents recommended for the compensation? Is that tied to
it? So of the 5.6, we anticipate there's two primary sources. One is some tuition revenue, but the tuition revenue we want to keep as much as we can into the program area, but there's tuition revenue that can support that, and there's also a number of people who are on grant funds. And so the people that are on grant funds are accounted for in that 5.6.
Thank you. Please proceed.
So we covered these. So these are the small projects that we talked about. Leaders Archives, the 1.25 was half funded last year at 1.25 for a total of 2.5. The Sitka Campus Dock and Mariculture Training Facility, the $2 million, it was half of the $4 million request last year, of which $2 million was funded last year. The $3.5 million is an additional request from UAA, or new this year, and this is to work on upgrades to the community campus facilities to deliver more of the baccalaureate and associate programs that exist at the main campus and deliver those onto the community campuses. And then the last item is one that is a request from Juno for the joint use facility. This is a shared facility with DMVA, and you will see the same 1.5 or 2 million. We share that facility, and I should have known what that amount was for DMVA, but it's 1.5 or 2 million from DMVA for the full roof replacement in the shared facility. So you're going to see a complimentary request from DMVA for that. That's a 20-plus year old facility now, which is hard to imagine because it feels new. But that was a real success, having that facility as a shared use facility. Receipt authority projects. We have native gathering space. We have UAF received a grant for a transit fleet facility. to upgrade their facility or their essentially campus buses and the facility that houses them. And then the Cyril George, so both the Alaska Native Gathering Space and the Cyril George Indigenous Knowledge Center are fundraising priorities, and part of that is getting receipt authority for those. And then the federal statutory UA receipts, this is just making our budget and our current actuals come into line. So just the normal budget detail. Okay, I'm going to jump past these and go to our student recruitment and retention. So over the last, starting first in the fall of 2023, after the university's budget had been stabilized, fall 23, we saw our first increase in student enrollment in 10 years. We've had consistent enrollment growth since then. Between the time I started and now, our incoming freshman class has increased 37%. Those students are our traditional students. They take more credit hours, and they are really making a difference to the campus vibrancy. That's been both work by stabilizing the university, but it was also support of the HIFE and the performance scholarship. Again, those students turn out 80 to 90% into Alaska's workforce and trained workforce. And this stretches from process technology and welding all the way through to a master's in public policy, accounting, engineering, and the like. About 2,700 graduates a year. We expect that to be 3,300 in a very short term. But what the board did, said we want to make this our highest institutional priority. We want to recruit more students, not only from Alaska, but out of state. One of the proposals is Alaska Unlocked, and this is a pilot proposal here at University of Alaska Southeast, where we have capacity for enrollment. We have really small class sizes. So what we said was, we are going to advertise out of state. We aren't going to charge out of state tuition. And if we fill up our classrooms, we're targeting about 100 additional out of state students a year. If we did that for 5 years, that's 500 additional students at University of Alaska Southeast. That's about 80 graduates a year. That's 80 graduates who many statistics say 75% will stay in this. That's a workforce game changer for the Southeast region. And so the first semester that's happening is coming up in the fall. Right now, our admissions and recruitment information, the initial information shows great results. If that pilot works, we may try it in particular programs where we have capacity. We're not doing this where we don't have capacity. Like nursing, we don't have capacity. We have as many Alaska takers in our nursing program as we can handle. We'll want to use that for Alaska students. But where we have other areas, maybe our accounting degrees, maybe our biology degrees, maybe our education degrees, where we can expand that. If this works, again, huge difference for Alaska workforce. Other things we're doing are things like the Common App. So a student puts in one application, and this goes nationwide. It works for the university. UAF piloted this program, and it increased their number of applications by almost 100%, and the return on that, because it's low return, because people, it's easy to send, but they're getting 10 and 12% more out-of-state enrollment, and their out-of-state enrollment is more significant than any of the other two. They're sitting at about 20% out-of-state enrollment. So So that's been good. A focus on retention and a focus on how do we get students graduated faster. And this is the board's number one priority across the system, across each of the universities, in the academic space, and in the student services space. These are the pieces they're working on. We have websites there noted. If you want to look at the variety of projects that we're working on, advising is one that has been shown to make a huge difference in the retention. So that $4.9 million that's requested there, that's an example of an accelerator. It's not foundational. It's an accelerator. But if you accelerate it, our move in the number of students we can attract, which is the workforce for Alaska, it pays dividends. You know, the rest of this is all details that I've covered. I don't think you want to go through 591,000 to communications to keep people enrolled, but happy to answer questions that the committee has. And, you know, if you wanted more detail on any particular area, I could go into immense detail.
Senator Coff.
Thank you. I hope I'm not signing up for immense detail. Just wondering, we've talked about costs here. What about revenue opportunities? I'd be interested to hear university systems as revenue generators. And I know, you know, the university system has endowments, some progress on monetizing assets, things that can be done to somehow leverage the assets of the university to help bring down some of the costs that we have presented in this request.
Mm-hmm. So we are working on those every day. I'll provide a few examples. As you know, we have a very small land grant at roughly 150,000 acres. We had a bill passed federally that allowed for a state land grant so that the university could select 350,000 acres from yet-to-be-conveyed state land. We are working through that process. That 350,000 acres, we have to have that completed by DNR by the end of December 26, so right around the corner. Once that land comes from DNR, it goes to BLM, comes to the university, we have 350,000 additional acres. Right now, the endowment of the 150,000 acres that we have, that we've monetized, that endowment is about $180 million. We can draw 5% from that. That is the natural resources. That's what we call that. 5% goes into a fund called the Natural Resources Fund. That 5% funds the UA Scholars Program. It has been the jump start for all of this recruitment, retention, and graduation program. It also has been the funding source for some improvements in processes. So we're revamping our complete procurement system. So we're going to an e-procurement system. So that's the backdrop funding for those kind of opportunities. On the monetization of the IP, intellectual property, we have offices that are working on that, but we haven't had a breakthrough. We have several patents. We've had some licensing agreements, but we haven't had a breakthrough. We're very bullish on this critical minerals piece, because what we're looking at is mining techniques and mining processes. Some specific investments we did with the money the state provided a few years ago was testing equipment, so you can see within a sample how much critical mineral or rare earth elements there are, prior to the university purchasing that equipment to serve the entire state. All of those things had to go out of state and then be sent back with the results. But we anticipate more advancement there. The student enrollment, that's what covers some of the receipt authority on salaries, covers some of our fixed costs, covers some of the advising. So we're using the student tuition and fees. I think the biggest area that we want to see progress on is that IP. That is we have people working on it, but we need to go. Another huge relationship that was an outshot from the drones investment is we have a tremendous interest with the Department of Defense. So some people call it Department of War now. And if that relationship comes true, that also gives us a lot of opportunity in the IP, but yet to come.
Follow up.
Was that too much immense detail?
No, that's good. So I guess the one thing I hear on the land issue is it sounds like we're really up against the wall on schedule. Is there a problem there?
There is not. There is a willing, we have a willing partner in DNR. There's a lot of state process that is required, and we don't go beyond a couple of weeks without a check-in and a conversation. We were anticipating some public notices coming out here in last week. I was out of town in D.C. working with a federal delegation. So I'm not sure if those additional came out, but we are very close to seeing our biggest chunk of land from that process being transferred over to BLM, and that's the Ray Mountains, and that's actually like 250 plus thousand acres of the 350. That one piece is huge. Again, very close alignment into the critical minerals area too. So.
But that brings up the next thing. So as far as the progression, the sequence of events, so if you get a parcel, then you still have to somehow assess what to do with it.
Still have to monetize it.
And so is that being done sequentially, like we'll get it and then we'll figure it out, or is there some figuring it out even while we're in the process of getting it to help kind of stack layers of activity so that you can hit the ground running should this come to pass?
Yes and no. Our selection was based on what could we do to monetize the property. And as you can imagine, you know, 50 plus years after statehood, the really good parcels aren't, you know, we're not like UW that gets downtown Seattle. So a lot of ours is, some of it is potential mineral property. Some of it is going to be recreational properties. We're working on our hunting and fishing, our hunting and trapping rules, because as we get additional parcels that are traditionally used for hunting or trapping, we want to be able to be until we've monetized it, we want to have it accessible. But it's a long game. It's not tomorrow.
Thank you.
Senator Cronk.
Thank you, Mr. I got a few questions. So I'm going to just kind of go back. This is one of my groups about the UA land grant initiatives, right? And so what kind of criteria, strategic goals guided the selection of the certain parcels? And I'm really talking about the Otna region. And has those selections been clearly communicated with the affected shareholders and the public in those areas?
Yeah. So our land grant office has done public forums, and all the communities that we've made selections from and talked with some of the Otna employees. The reality is when this land will go either to the state or the university, it won't remain in the federal hands. So partly is the discussion of, you know, what the university would do vis-a-vis what the state would do. And our interests in the Otna region are more recreational than they are others. There are some areas of mineral potential, and that the mineral potential, the recreation potential, and the resale potential were our kind of primary criteria for selection.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, so another question is, how did the university evaluate the geographic distribution of these land selections, and what steps were taken to ensure that no single region is more disproportionately picked out?
The geographic distribution is really availability of remaining selections. So this is the state selections not yet conveyed, you know, that are still in federal hands. That really determined our geographic distribution because of the kind of what was left.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the last one, and you highlighted that this is very concerning, is before we transfer those lands, the university doesn't have a very clear policy on hunting, but specifically no trapping. Mm-hmm. And a large part of, especially the area you talked about, the Ray Mountains, there's lots of trap lines and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it would be very concerning that all those thousands of acres are shut off to everyday Alaskans for whether it is hunting or trapping.
Right.
So and how do we address that?
Yeah, we are working on that specifically to put in a policy that makes that possible now that we have land that makes a difference in that perspective.
Thank you.
Other questions for the president? Since we're talking about revenue raising, Madam President, can you give us an update on alumni giving? How has that trended? Are those numbers up, down, or flat?
I don't have the alumni number on the top of my head. I have our overall number, and we've gone from about an average of $16 million a year to an average of $30 million a year in fundraising 5 years before to the most recent 5 years. Just a tremendous showing of support for the university and its importance. We are getting more individual donors over corporate donors. In prior times, we were, and we still are, heavily dependent on corporate donations, but we are diversifying into more individual donors. The foundation funds about $7,000 or $7 million per year in scholarships. And one of the things that kind of happened when there was turmoil was we weren't utilizing all of that $7 million. And so one of the goals has been improving the ability for us to get those dollars in students' hands. And we had a year where we had 95% of that was distributed to students, where before it was in the 75%. So those are just constant improvements that we're doing to create access. The rest of the money has largely is pointed at particular programs. Like there's a big programmatic endowment for fisheries. There's a programmatic endowment. It's been a lot of funding for the museum. We just 2 Fridays ago had the grand opening for the Babula Planetarium on the Museum of the North, the single largest private gift in the university's history at $8.5 million. And so that planetarium now in the University of the North, University Museum of the North, is now open, and it is truly amazing that one individual with other individuals, Sarah and Carrie Keller helped, as well as Walt and Marita Bobula, and the Stroker Foundation also helped, but the vast majority of that funding came from Dr. Bobula and his wife. Transformational gift. So these are things that weren't happening 5 and 10 years ago, and so hopefully they continue.
Thank you very much. Any concluding remarks before we bring the committee out of here?
Foundational stability.
Thank you very much, Madam President. we do not have a next meeting of the University of Alaska Budget Subcommittee scheduled. Stay tuned for when we schedule our closeout. In advance of that, I'll encourage all members, please work with me, work with my office, Ms. Atkinson, to put forward your priorities and recommendations. And, of course, Mr. Michael Partlow from Legislative Finance is available to all the members of the subcommittee and is the chief analyst on the University of Alaska budget. With nothing else in front of the subcommittee this morning, we are adjourned at 9:48 a.m.